श्रील गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, श्री श्री ब्रजनाथ हलदार की जय, श्री सिंह भगवान की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतन की जय, श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय, तिरुबाब महोत्सव की श्री अभिराम दास ठाकुर की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रेमानंद। सो वेलकम टू ऑल ऑफ यू, प्रणाम, थैंक्स फॉर कमिंग, एंड ऑल्सो माई प्रणाम टू ऑल ऑफ यू कनेक्टेड online. So we are continuing with our series of lectures on the Brahma Stuti, or the prayers of Sri Brahmaji after the well-known Brahma Vimohan Lila. Today we are in our fourth meeting, where we will be studying verse number 2. We have two introductory sessions, then yesterday we studied verse number 1, and today we are continuing with our second verse. But as usual, we will make some brief summary of what we saw last class yesterday, which was verse number 1. To begin with, we made a brief introduction to this Brahma Stuti, mentioning how Brahma actually is not an inhabitant of Vrindavan per se here, but he's wanting to become one. So this is a very similar section of the Bhagavatam to others, where foreign, if you will, people enter into Vrindavan and become totally moved by what's there and start to pray in that connection, like Uddhava, like we mentioned, or on some other level, Indra also, not the Brajavasi per se, but realizing on some degree or another the extent of Brajabhav and praying in that connection in some way or another. So Brahma, as we know, he has an affinity for Sakya Rasa. He wants to foster that affinity that he received from the beginning of creation, meeting Krishna, his own guru. And now he's having this special opportunity by having this unique window into the Sakya Rasa universe, Krishna and his friends, and entering his Poganda age, which is an ideal age for Krishna's interaction with his friends, Sakya Rasa, basically. So, mostly the Brahma Stuti will be revolving around Tattva and Siddhanta, the basic underlying philosophy for our Krishna consciousness practice. But it's important always to bear in mind which is the Bhava which Brahma wants to attain, which is Sakya. Although the Tattva that he will present is universally applicable to any affinity that any devotee may have in time, nonetheless it's important to keep in mind the one who is praying here, which is his aspiration and in which direction he's praying for, and so on. So I will briefly read in English the verse from yesterday. You have there the paper in Sanskrit. I will briefly read it, the translation in English, and share some comments in that connection, and then we go to verse 2. So Brahma is saying in the very first verse, "I bow down to you, O worshipable one, who are the son of the cowherd Nanda, with soft feet, a cloud-complexioned body and lightning-colored clothes. Your beautiful face is effulgently framed with earrings made of gunja berries and decorated with an ornament of peacock tail feathers. You wear a garland of forest flowers and you look so sweet, holding yogurt and fruits in one hand, a flute, horn and prodding stick in the other." So this is a very classical, as we mentioned, depiction of who Krishna is, which is our deity, if you will. Now, flute, peacock feather, defining elements that you won't find in any other form of the Absolute. Some of them you will find in some forms, you know, like the dark complexion is also in Narayan, yellow clothes also in Narayan, some other things, but flute, peacock feather, gunja mala, gunja berries, uja earrings, and so on, all in Krishna. So here Brahma is describing, detail by detail, the object of his Sakya Rasa, basically, the form of the Absolute that corresponds with his affinity, with his desire to serve Krishna in that particular form. So we explored some other verses that appear in other books and even in the Bhagavatam, which are similar to these ones. So it's interesting because we find throughout the Bhagavatam many of these like meditations of Krishna, no? Which is his form, which are his defining attributes. So here Brahma, and throughout the prayers, he will be expressing considerable Aishwarya. He starts saying, Nome, no? Nami Idye, no? I offer pranam to you, O most worshipable one. That's pretty much an Aishwarya prayer, basically. No? The Brajavasis won't address Krishna like that. No? I offer obeisances to you, O most worshipable. And maybe joking, as we mentioned with him, some friend may say that, but not seriously. But so Brahma here is aware, I thought you were an imposter, and that's why he tried to kidnap the cubs and the boys. Now he's realizing Krishna is too Bhagavan, so I am. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are the source of all forms of the Absolute. So there is a good amount of Aishwarya in his prayers, but also gradually he's realizing the object of his affection. So gradually his prayers will go more and more from Aishwarya to Madhurya. And by Madhurya I mean here intimacy, the intimacy that is so defining of Vrindavan, basically. So here Brahma is still in Vimohan, no? Bewildered, his forehead still spinning because of all that happened and because of now having Krishna there and starting to realize what he made, being fearful of I may have committed aparad, an offense towards the form of Krishna, who now I'm realizing is the source of all sources, if you will. So he's praying in that particular spirit. There is Aishwarya, but more and more he's pointing to the idea of I wish I could relate with you in this beautiful form in heaven. As we say yesterday, Brahma is feeling, oh, you are so beautiful, Krishna, but is correct that I say that? Because I'm not accustomed to relate to you in that way, but at the same time I'm feeling some attraction there. Mm-hmm. So here Brahma is accepting Krishna as the avatari, as the very source of all avatars or divine descents. And of course, as we know, Krishna, in a joking way, according to the commentators, may argue with Brahma, like, oh, are you praising this person who is supreme with dark complexion? Are you referring to Narayan, right? That's not for me, that's for Narayan. And Brahma says, no. It's for you. No, you have the peacock feather, you have the flute, you have the lighting, like the gunja earrings. Narayan doesn't have them. So it's for you, my prayer, basically. Mm-hmm. So, again, all these points are connected to the age of Krishna at this point. Tender feet, we mentioned Mridupade. Brahma is saying, you have tender feet, which means at this age, Krishna is just entering Poganda, which is like his childhood, abandoning his, how do you say, infancy, and entering childhood. So to say that the size of his body, transcendental body, is not so heavy as to leave footprints on the ground. So it's not that heavy yet. So his foot are compared soft feet. No? So Brahma is implying with this, I'm attracted to that particular form, to this particular age, to the prospect that this particular age is offering. So over and over again, in this verse and in the rest, Brahma will be establishing from many points the superiority of the Dvibhuj, or the two-handed forms of Krishna, over the Chaturbhuj, or the four-handed forms, four-armed form of Narayan. Which is, again, a very crucial point of the Bhagavatam. Krishna is too Bhagavan, so yeah, Krishna is the source, even of Narayan. And he concluded the verse by telling to him, you are the son of Nanda. Establishing this also very important Gaudiya point. Krishna is not the son of Vasudev. Krishna is the son of Nanda. Now, the original Krishna, Braja Krishna, Stu Bhagavan Sayam, is the son of Nanda. And all previous items are included in this definition, the son of Nanda, which has so many implications that are mentioned here. So then, in this first verse, basically the whole purpose of the Brahma Stuti is kind of encapsulated. But then Brahma will try to unpack the implications of this first verse in the 39 verses that come after, which are kind of an extension of what's implied in this first verse. So this is the very idea that he's pointing to from the very beginning. I'm praising to you in order to attain you. I want to attain a relationship with you. And of course, relationships are specific, not an abstract connection with you, but I want to relate with you in the context of fraternal love. So this whole Brahma Stuti will be part of Brahma's sadhana to obtain his cherished goal. So that's what we saw yesterday. Not so brief summary, sorry for that. And today we will go to verse number 2. So before going to the verse, Srila Jiva Goswami kind of connects or gives some backdrop to what will be here. So he says, Jiva Goswami, his Krama Sandarva say that Brahma, having seen Krishna's greatness, will speak with reverence. I mean, still, as we see, reverence is here. Seemingly, he say, indifferent to praising him out of confusion. So we will see this verse, which somehow, maybe it's not that direct praise as the previous one. It's more of a description of things, but not so much, I offer pranam to you, and so on. But mostly Brahma is expressing, I cannot understand you, basically. In different ways, we will see. This verse will be a further a statement from Brahma. I'm still bimohan. I'm still bewildered. I cannot understand this of you, this and this and this. So still my foreheads are spinning, maybe now with new reasons, with deeper reason. My bimohan now is deeper than the previous bimohan. So my foreheads are now spinning in a deeper sense. So I'll read the Sanskrit you have there in the paper. I will also share here for those who are online. The chanda, or the, how to say, the meter of these verses, the same as the previous one. The meter is Basanta Tilak. So it says like this. Asya pideva vapusho madanugrahasya svecham mayasya natu bhuta mayasya kopi neshe mahitva basitum manasantarena sakshat vaiva kimutatma sukhanu bhute. So this is the Sanskrit, and we will go now to the English translation of it, which says like this. I cannot truly comprehend with controlled mind the glory of this divine form of yours, 400 form of yours, implication. Like the previous one, not the first one that he said, O Lord, which is a manifestation of your grace on me, manifest by your own will, and which appears just to fulfill the desires of your devotees. It is certainly not a product of the material elements. Then, how can I understand the happiness you experience within yourself? And how can I know your human-like form, whose bliss is unknown to others, though it is present directly before me? So this is basically the second verse. So as you, we will obviously go again and again through this verse. But basically Brahma is expressing, I'm totally bewildered. First he's saying, I cannot understand your 400 form, which was shown to him before. He saw many 400 forms. I cannot still fathom the nature of one of those 400 forms. What to speak of all of those. And now I'm realizing that this 200 form of yours is the source of the 400 forms. So if I cannot understand one of the 400 forms, what to speak of understanding many 400 forms, or what to speak of understanding the 200 forms, which is the origin of all of them. And that 200 form is standing now right before my eyes, the object of my eternal, what's going on? And I cannot understand the grace that you are bestowing on me. I cannot understand how you appear out of your own will, how you reciprocate of your with your devotees, how you are, basically, your form is a result of the bliss you interact with, you have with your devotees. We will go into each of those. But basically, the point is, Brahma is, I cannot understand, basically. That's again, Brahma is coming down to earth, remember. He was Brahma, the great personality, great thinker, topmost scientist of the world, forehead, thinking in all directions, the most intellectual personality in the whole universe now, realizing, as Socrates say, the only thing I know is that I don't know anything. So let's go to the word by word of this verse. That's like usually we do. So first word is asya. So asya means of this. So Brahma, by saying asya means of this body, he's referring to Krishna's body. Api means even. Deva means O Lord, God. Oh Lord. Again, there is some Aishwarya in the content still. Vapushaha means of the body. Mat anugrahasya means which is mercy to me. Anugrahasya means which is mercy and madness to me. It's like implying this body of yours that I'm seeing is your mercy to me, the fact that I can see that body. Sva ichchamayasya, which is imbued with your desire. Well, here we start to have different possibilities for these expressions, as you know. One means this body of yours is imbued with your desire. It's full of your desire. It's coming out of your own desire, or it appears out of the desires of your devotees, which is a very interesting point that we will unpack later. Krishna's form is the result of the devotees' desires. So, aicha mayasya. Each expression is very important. Na tu bhuta mayasya, but does not consist of the elements. No, your body is not material, basically. You don't have a, you have a body, but it's not. And I would say yesterday, actually, you are your body, as we will see. Krishna doesn't have a body. Krishna is his body. There's no difference between Krishna and his body, because his body is spiritual. Absolute. But it's not made of bhuta, of this panchabhuta, water, air, fire, etc. Kaha means Brahma. Api means although. Na ishe means I am unable. Mahi means the greatness. Tu means just. Abhashitum, to estimate. Manas means with my mind. Antarena means which is controlled and withdrawn. So basically, although I am so intelligent, I cannot understand with my mind, which is under control, although pretty much bewildered, but his senses and so on is pretty... I can understand your form. Sakshat, directly, which is directly appearing in front of me. Tava means your. Eva means just. Kimuta means what to speak. And he concludes with this. Atma sukha anubhute. I cannot understand your form. What to speak of atma sukha anubhute, of the experience of the happiness that you have in your mind, in your inner self. I cannot fathom the nature of your form. What to speak of what's going on in your inner self, the happiness, your joy you are experiencing within. Like Brahma is practically saying, I'm starting to discover all this. I feel like a baby in the kindergarten, starting to realize all the layers in the object of my love. I thought I knew you, but now I'm realizing I don't have a clue who you are, but I want to know you. I want to know. I'm attracted to all the things that I'm discovering. So, after the word by word, as I mentioned the other day, we are sharing the Bhavanuvad, or the commentary on this verse that my Guru Maharaj is doing, and he will include in his future books, Akhyamandal. So this commentary is Bhaktivedanta Bhavanubhad, its name. So I'll read this commentary and we will reflect on this a little bit, and then we will go to the commentaries of the all elder previous acharyas of our Sampradaya. So fasten your seatbelts, pay attention please. So it says like this. In order to underscore the theological implications of his praise of Krishna's form, which on the surface appears to be no more than a description of the form of an ordinary cowherd boy, Brahma then states that although he himself is well known as the creator with an extraordinary and venerable four-headed form, unlike his form that consists of material ingredients, Krishna's form is not made of material ingredients. Natu bhuta mayasya kupi. So this is the first paragraph. No? Again, as we mentioned, Brahma is well known as a very capable person, very intelligent, very empowered by Krishna to perform the function of being the architect of the universe. Four heads, thinking personality, but he's not able to fathom Krishna's form, which is not made of material elements. So the point is, Brahma's form is made of material elements. Although he has a very refined intellect, all that is made of matter, subtle matter, psychic matter, gross matter, but all his form is not spiritual. Brahma's form is not spiritual form. So he's realizing now the possibility of spiritual form, spiritual identity. Krishna is having that, and of course Brahma would like to have a corresponding one to properly relate with Krishna as he's wishing. So he's trying here to further, again, clarify. It's important always to bear in mind the thread between verse and verse, not the connection between one verse and another. They're not totally like separating from each other. So Brahma here is trying to give further grounding to his previous praise of Krishna's form in the first verse. All these attributes would seem to be like he's glorifying a cowherd boy. Of course he mentioned you are the most worshipable cowherd boy. But how he's trying to further clarify that form is fully spiritual. No? Yeah, peacock feather, yeah, buffalo horn, yeah, prodding stick, yeah, gunja earrings, all that is totally non-material. Although it may seem pretty ordinary, it's supra-extraordinary. That's a term in Sanskrit, aprakrita. Prakrita means mundane, and aprakrita means it seems mundane, but it's totally transcendental. It's not overtly transcendental. Vrindavan is not overtly transcendental. It seems ordinary. Overtly transcendental is Vaikuntha. When you go to Vaikuntha, everyone has another pair of arms. That's pretty overtly extraordinary. Like, oh, these guys have two more arms everywhere. I'm in some special place, no? But you go to Vrindavan, it seems like my village, no? But if you look closely to that, if you pay proper attention, you realize, oh, this is our Vaikuntha. So Vaikuntha is transcendental, Vrindavan is super transcendental. But at first sight, it may seem ordinary. So that's called aprakrita. Prakrita is mundane. Adokshaya is overtly transcendental, beyond mind and senses. Aprakrita means it seems mundane, but it's even above adokshaya, even above transcendental. It's not merely transcendental. It's super transcendental. So Brahma is like kind of awakening to this reality, to this possibility, Vrindavan. So it continues like this. Furthermore, although Brahma is capable of turning his mind inward in deep introspection, remember his capacity at the beginning of creation, tapa, and so on, he states that such contemplation unto itself cannot afford one the experience of Gopal Krishna's Dvi Bhuja Rup, the form of two hands of Krishna in Vrindavan. No, only mere mental focus, intellectual capacity, personal effort to meditate, that's not enough to have darshan of Gopal Krishna. Thus, he implies that the sattvic disciplines of Jnana and Yoga, centered on arresting the restless mind and experiencing the Atma, afford one only an atomic experience of Ananda, Atma Ananda. In comparison to that, what is the bliss of Krishna's form, his Swarupananda? And moreover, what is the bliss Krishna experiences within through his fraternal love with his friends, Swarup Shakti Ananda? So here we are entering into another very interesting arena, when basically Brahma is saying, again, as much as I can try to concentrate my mind by personal effort, by disciplines, sattvic disciplines like Jnana and Yoga, which are not depending so much on bhakti, on Swarup Shakti, but on one's personal self, that's not enough to have this darshan. That may help, that may provide the experience of Atma Ananda, of on controlling the mind and trying to perceive the Atma, devoid of all material filtering, which is a level of Ananda, of bliss. But there are many levels of Anandas, we spoke the other day. And there's Atma Ananda, Brahma Ananda, Sarup Ananda, Sarup Shakti Ananda. So we will speak a little bit more later about this. But Brahma is realizing this. I have the capacity to concentrate on myself, experience the Ananda of the Atma. But there's almost nothing. This is an atomic thing in comparison to the Ananda that resides inside of Krishna's own being, Swarupananda, the Ananda of Krishna's own Swarup, own nature. And when that inner nature takes form in the shape of different devotees and Krishna interacts in loving service with them, that provides him even a higher Ananda than the one he has inherently in him. That's called Swarup Shakti Ananda or Bhakti Ananda. All this is explained also by Jiva Goswami in his Sandharvas. In answer to these questions, again, Brahma is asking all these questions. He cannot understand, he cannot fathom. In answer to these questions, Brahma says that he cannot fathom the bliss of Krishna's Sachit Ananda Rupa, his form made of this. What to speak of the bliss he derives from interacting with his Swarup Shakti in the form of his friends? In general, of his devotees, but here the focus is Krishna's friends, and Brahma's focus is that. Brahma describes Krishna's form as Swechamayi, implying both that Krishna's form is self-manifest, not by product of anything, and also that it is manifest in his merciful response to the desires of his friends. Anugraha. In his mercy, he reciprocates accordingly. His form and person are inextricably entwined with his friends' love for him. That's a very important point we will try to unfold. Krishna's form is inseparable from the love of his devotees. One is the byproduct of the other. I always like to say Krishna is a byproduct of the love of his devotees. A particular type of affection is carving that particular form of the Absolute. This form arises out of their love and is at the same time the cause of their love. That's a nice point. Krishna's form is the result of the type of love that he's receiving from a particular devotee, but also is fostering that love in them. By them seeing that form, their love, in this case Sakya Prem, is increasing. It is self-manifest in that Krishna's self includes his internal Swarup Shakti that Bhakti is also constituted of. So Bhakti is the essence of the Swarup Shakti. Let's go to the last paragraph. Can I ask you a glass of water, please?
Yes.
Thank you. Love and its object are simultaneously one and different, interpenetrating one another. Like sugar, Krishna's form is inherently sweet. However, his Swarup Shakti tastes his sweetness in ways that he cannot, other than through his Shakti, this Shakti manifests as his intimate friends. Thus, the Ananda of his Swarup Shakti exceeds that of his Swarup. Krishna's form does not answer to the world of things or thoughts, and it also dances above and beyond the stillness of the quiet, introspective mind. It can be known only by his grace, the principal agents of which are Krishna's devotees. And here there's one footnote with which this commentary ends, which says, in this Leela, we find that Krishna manifested his Aishwarya more than in any other recorded instance. However, he was able to do this only in the absence of his Swarup Shakti in the form of his friend's fraternal love. Arguably, in their presence, he could not do so. Such is the power of their love. So when Krishna manifested these unlimited forms of Narayan in front of Brahma, Krishna's friends were not there. Because if they would have been there, the power of their affection probably would be so powerful that Krishna wouldn't be able to exhibit that Aishwarya. So he was able to exhibit that degree of Aishwarya in the absence of the intimate affection of his friends who were somewhere else. No? So that's the point that here this Maguru wants to make. So we will try to unfold this idea. This important idea, of course, may require many, many lectures about the Swarup Shakti Ananda and about how Krishna derives the highest type of bliss in interaction with his internal potency taking shape in the form of different devotees. That there Krishna derives the highest bliss. But let's continue by sharing some purports from some of our ancient acharyas and continue unfolding the point of this Bhavanubha. So we'll begin with with Sridhar Swami's commentary, his Bhavartha Deepika, very ancient tikka or commentary on the Bhagavatam. So I'll read some of the things they are saying here. So Sridhar Swami and many of the commentators will paraphrase Krishna or Brahma in their commentaries, and this does create further sub-dialogues in between or trying to unfold the implications of the verse. So Sridhar Swami is paraphrasing Krishna. And Krishna is saying, to Brahma. You started by saying, I praise. No? Previous verse, first word, Nomi. I offer pranam, I praise. But why do you keep elaborating upon this sarup? Krishna is asking, like, why? Say so you praise, but now you continue just now. You are not praising now. You are just elaborating upon my form and nature and so on. Brahma responds to that here. O Lord, although I am Brahma, I am unable to understand the glory of this body of yours. And if I cannot understand the glory of your form, then who at all might be able to understand, even with a fully controlled mind? Thus Brahma concludes, you are the avatari and you are beyond the gunas. So again, Brahma is saying, if I cannot understand in this world, speaking about whoever is in this material plane, if I cannot understand who had the most brilliant head, nobody can understand. No. In material terms, no? Like concluding, nobody can understand your form. Materially speaking, it's not possible to get to your form, to get to understand you. Material method is not the means to get to you. Actually, I have controlled mind. That's the point. Because you say you have uncontrolled mind, you may be totally projecting, filtering reality through your prejudices and thoughts. But if you have fully controlled mind, you can say you can perceive reality pretty objectively. You can be really objective. No? Like my Guru Maharaj likes to say, mysticism is subjective objectivity. No? To be a mystic is someone who has controlled his mind, her mind, and who has a personal subjective experience of reality, but which is objective because senses, mind are under control. I'm not just filtering my biases, my bias on reality. So Brahma has controlled mind, has that capacity. We saw at the beginning of creation how he could absorb into these two syllables for many years. And he says, although I have that capacity, still I cannot grasp your form. To do so, your grace is required. Madano gracias, we will say. So his conclusion is, according to that grace he received here, you are the avatari, which means the source of all other descents. Again, Krishna's two Bhagavan, so yeah. And your body is beyond the gunas. Your body is not made of Maya Shakti. Maya Shakti is made of sattva, rajas, tamas. Those are the ingredients of the illusory energy, the gunas. But Krishna is totally beyond that. Again, so Brahma is still affected by that, but by Krishna's grace, he's having a glimpse of what's beyond the gunas. He's having this unique darshan. Let's go to Srila Jiva Goswami, what he has to say to us in his Lagu Vaishnava Toshan, his commentary on the Bhagavad. He says the phrase Shakshat Tava Eva, in Sanskrit of the verse, which means directly only you, means only you who surpasses all other avatars. So some similar idea in connection to words in the verse. No? Directly only you is above all other forms of the Absolute. So sorry to repeat this concept, but this is a very crucial conclusion that the Brahma Stuti wants to give. Krishna is the source of all other forms. Again, we may take it for granted because from day one we hear that with the devotees, but outside of our circle, that's not the norm generally. Again, and sometimes it's good to have a glimpse at outside the circle to fathom, like, which is the general standard outside of our circle to fully more appreciate this emphasis and these points that here this section of the Bhagavatam is making. Srila Jiva Goswami is paraphrasing Brahma, and he says, Brahma is saying, you have a body of the presiding deity of the universe. The word Deva also can mean presiding deity. And Asya can mean the universe. So you have the body of the presiding deity of the universe, which is called Narayan, displayed in the four-armed form just shown to me. But they actually belong to one body. Like implying, I've seen the form of Narayan, Vishnu, which is more connected to God and the world, but I see that form coming from your form. So actually there's no difference between the two, but I can realize which is the source of which form. And Brahma will later say, Jiva Goswami mentions, Narayanangam Narabhu Jalayanat. Narayanangas, we say yesterday. He will say, Narayan is an anga of yours. of you. You are Angi, you are like the main body, and Narayana is a limb of the main body. You know, it's an expansion of you. That's a very, again, Gaudiya statement. You know, this line, Narayana Anga. Brahma is saying, Narayana is an Anga of Krishna. Hmm? But this form, Sakshat Tava Eva, again, this form is directly you. You are direct, Krishna is directly Bhagavan. Swayam Bhagavan. Swayam Bhagavan means Bhagavan when, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, when he wants to be himself. No? Narayana is more God in the office, basically. God in the White House. God at job. God with suit and tie and shoes and all this, like, whatever. No? Like, codes of conduct that you have to have with the president, with the universal, cosmic, whatever, leader. Lots of bureaucracy and all that stuff. But Krishna doesn't wear shoes. He's barefoot. He's the god of informality in Braj. So Krishna is two Bhagavan. So yeah, again, no? It's important that all these points also are very helpful for us to grasp what is the psychology of Vrindavan. How the Brajavasis conceive Krishna? How do they think of Narayan? So we gradually may enter access that reality. This is a famous narration that once Krishna was with the gopis and they were performing Rasa Lila, and at one point Krishna disappears as usual for different reasons. So the gopis in separation, like maddened, start to look for him, and suddenly at one point Krishna, wanting to play a trick on the gopis, he manifests himself as Narayan. So he appears on the gopis' path as Narayan, no? God. In Vrindavan, Narayana is God, as we say. Krishna is not God in Vrindavan. Krishna is Krishna. And God is Narayana. So the gopis meet Narayana. Try to imagine. You are looking for your beloved and suddenly God appears on your way. So what would you say? What would you ask? The gopis only had one question in mind to ask Narayana. Many people may ask, oh, here is God. We can ask him so many things, so many blessings, so many stuff. It's God, provider. But the gopis only, in their psychology, they only had one question in mind, which was, O Narayan, Om Namo Narayana, you are God, you are omniscient. Can you tell us where Krishna is? That was the only thing they had to ask God. I mean, you know, you have the information. Please tell us. And Krishna was like Narayan, like totally overwhelmed. Like, I mean, these gopis have loved me so much that even if I appear like Narayan, they had nothing to do with Narayan. And the only way they approach Narayan is in connection with me. I mean, they cannot think of God separate from me in that sense. No. They're not thinking of me separate from God. They cannot think of God separate from me. You follow? It's just show this worship in Narayana. Oh, please, God, protect my love, my little darling. If Nanda Maharaj is worshipping Narayana Sila in the altar, it's, please, Narayana, protect my child. So every time they approach God, it's with Krishna in mind. So Krishna was like dumbfounded by witnessing the degree of the quality of the Brajavasis' love, and he was not able to reply. Remember, the gopis were asking, where is Krishna? And Narayana was like, where is Krishna? God. And the gopis said, he's not answering. Let's continue looking for Krishna. Yeah, and they continue running. And Narayana was like, oh my God. So that's a very great example that shows which is the psychology that pervades the whole of Braj, how all of the inhabitants of Vrindavan think about Krishna, think about Narayana in relation to Krishna. Let's go to Sanatana Goswami's commentary. He says, paraphrasing Brahma as well, I am unable to understand your form even with a controlled mind, so what need be said about my not understanding the glory of you in person, the avatari? So again, I cannot understand, as we mentioned, this form of yours that appear before. He's saying, I mean, today you show me many four-handed forms, and I am unable to understand even just one of such body, the four-handed ones. Still, what to speak? No, of the other four-handed body, four-handed form, yeah, many of them, I cannot grasp even one of them. With controlled mind, being Brahma, four heads, four controlled minds, if you will. What to speak of Kaimutya Nyaya. He's speaking, he's referring here to what's called sometimes Kaimutya Nyaya, which means some statement is there with the idea of concluding what to speak of. No? Like, I don't know, Ajamil. Ajamil chanted the name of Narayana without wanting to refer to God by calling his son, as we know. And such a wonderful effect was there. So, of course, the idea of that pastime is not, so we can just put your son in name of God, and that's all, you're saved. No need to chant, no need to be concerned about chanting Sudanam. You just call your name, have your child next to you at the moment of death, and you're saved. That's not the message of the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is saying, if such a thing happened by such an indirect reference to the name, what to speak if you chant the name directly with full love and attention? So this Kaimutya Nyaya is like the principle of what to speak of. So here's the similar thing. Brahma is saying, with four controlled heads and minds, I was not able to grasp even one of those unlimited 400 forms. What to speak of, understanding this 200 form that is in front of me, which is the source of all other forms. So Brahma is again Vimohan in a deeper way. His Vimohan remains, but becomes more comprehensive for deeper reasons now. What else? Now we will enter into the direction of the bliss of Bhagavan that is mentioned in this verse also. Brahma is not only in this verse showing, I'm overwhelmed in connection to your 200 forms in comparison to the 400, but what's the bliss you have, the experience within? He starts to make this connection. Your form is connected to your bliss. No, this is a very interesting point. Now, Brahma is, again, having all these epiphanies while praying to Krishna. Like, I'm perceiving your form and this is so astonishing and so and I'm receiving this inspiration to connect your form, which is spiritual, not material, in connection to what's going on internally in you. What's your inner bliss expresses itself in your form. Because it's like that. No? Even in materially speaking, if we are internally, I don't know, depressed or sad or concerned, it will show up in your face, in your form. No? Your form will illustrate your inner world, if you will. So Brahma is witnessing Krishna's external, quote-unquote, form, and naturally thinking, there's some correspondence of this with what's going on in his inner world. And of course, Krishna is the form of bliss, the form of beauty. And Jiva Goswami confirms this. Now here's Brahma is praying Krishna's greatness, and Jiva Goswami says his greatness is his bliss. Now, ultimately. Ultimately, Krishna's greatness is not so much his Aishwarya, but his Madhurya. His sweetness, his love, his bliss. I mean, the main bliss Krishna is experiencing is not in connection to Aishwarya, but it's his connection to Madhurya, to the intimacy of how he is loved and he can love his devotees. So it's important that we like connect all these dots, if you will. No? Krishna's form in connection to his bliss, and his bliss in connection to the loving interaction he has with his devotees. Not to the fact that he's God. That's not the main source of bliss for Krishna. That's there on some part of the compartment, but for him it's, I'm a friend of Sridhar Subal, I'm a lover of... this is like Krishna's greatest source of joy. Srila Rupa Goswami mentions, he describes 64 qualities that Krishna has, and he says four of them are not even present in Narayana, are only present in Krishna. One of them is Prema Madhurya. He experiences a very unique type of sweet love with his devotees, which again has to do with his bliss. Lila Madhurya, he engages in very sweet pastimes, not present in Narayana. And Lila means pastimes, and pastime means someone else is there. It's not just I'm engaging in pastime with myself. No, we need associates for that to happen. So when Krishna is showing Lila Madhurya, that speaks about his parshas, his associates. Krishna is called Lila Purushottam. The other day we spoke in Ram Navami. Ram is called Maryada Purushottam. Supreme Lord, when he's showing the perfect decorum, how to behave according to the rules of the government, and so Krishna is Lila Purushottam. The Supreme Personality engaged in lila, in play. Mahaprabhu's Prem Purushottam, given a topmost type of love. Sanatan Goswami mentions, let's go back to Sanatan Goswami for a moment. Because as you may know, Sanatan Goswami, mainly Sanatan Goswami, he will give some meaning to the verse and then will say, or, and he will be another, giving another layer. And then he will say, or, and he will give another layer. And then he will say, or, and he will, like, mining deeper and deeper into different possibilities, all of them real, but different layers of that. No? So here we have many of these or by Srila Sanatana Goswami. So he said, in this connection, Devabhapusa, which means the body of the Lord, can also be taken as one word and means that Brahma is saying, I'm unable to understand this glory of you, which is this particular form of Balagopal, who plays. Deva, interestingly, this is a very important point. Deva, generally is translated as God. But Deva comes from the Sanskrit root, div. And div means to play. It's a verb, to play. Like when you say in English the verb to be, to do, to the. So in Sanskrit you have like the dhatus, which are like this verbal root, to play, div. So interesting, the word God comes from a root which speaks about playing. So in other words, if God has to do with play, the ultimate form of God is the one who plays the most. No? That's a point that my Guru Maharaj makes always. No? And that's Krishna, of course. No? Like when this Nixon, Ronald Nixon or Richard Nixon? Which was Richard? I mean, the president here is Ronald.
Reagan.
No. Ronald Nixon. There was one Nixon here.
Richard.
Okay, so this other one's called Ronald Nixon.
Oh,
yeah, I'm not speaking about the president of the States here. No. So this person was one, maybe you know, he's the first Gaudiya Vaishnav convert from the West at the beginning of the 1900s. So he was a pilot in the European army in the Second World War. And once his plane was hit by the enemy and was coming down, he was about to die. He was atheist for the whole life, but as the saying goes, you start to pray to God when you are atheist till the plane starts to go down. I mean, in Spanish they have a saying like that. No? Everyone is an atheist till the plane starts to. So this was the case, and he started to pray at that moment. God, if you exist, please save me. And if you save me, I promise you that I will dedicate the rest of my life to search for you. As you can imagine, he survived, because if not, we will know about this story. So he survived, and he realized, okay, God saved me. He exists. I will look for him. So he started to look for him in such a level that many people in the West were saying, you are inquiring too much. You are asking too deeply about God. We don't know what to say about your questions. Go to India, they told him. There we have heard that people really enter into the full detail of who God is. So he went to India with the hope, I will find God. But when he reached India, he became more astonished because he found an unlimited pantheon of personalities. He found Ganesh, Kali, Shiva, Krishna, Narayan, everyone. So he said, like, where to begin now? So, and it's not polytheism, as some people think. No? Hinduism promotes polytheism. No. So he started, interestingly, he applied a very interesting method in connection to this idea of div, God as playing. He started to pay attention what each one of these deities is doing. So he saw, okay, Brahma is creating. He's busy doing something. Shiva is meditating. He's busy trying to attain someone. And in this way, he was like seeing everyone is doing something. Everyone is doing something. Till he reached Krishna. And he realized he's not doing anything. He's playing. He must be God. He concluded, he had this intuition. He must be God. He has nothing to do. He's just celebrating life. He's celebrating his own fullness. Playing. And he became eventually initiated in the Radha Raman tradition by one female Gurvi, Yashodama, and became Sri Krishna Prem, interestingly. Oh. And if you want, I can add one thing to that, which is very interesting. He passed away in 1965, the year that Srila Prabhupada boarded the Jaladuta.
Wow.
And he passed away a few days before Prabhupada boarded the Jaladuta. And when he was leaving his body, he said, "My ship is leaving now." And he passed away.
Wow.
And his name is Sri Krishna Prem. So the ship of Krishna Prem was... Krishna inspired him to say that. And the ship of Krishna Prem was leaving a few days after. Sri Krishna Prem ki jai. So my point is, going back. Okay, God, Div, Deva, is God, is he who plays. And my Guru Master likes to say, place requires power. It's not just lack of power. Because when we were children, we were playing, but someone was there working to feed us. No? We were not concerned about working and earning money. And we were just playing. We were not investing power ourselves, but someone else's power was there, our parents. They were working, putting their power so we could play. You follow? So to play, you require power, whether it's yours or someone else's. Or my Guru Maharaj will say, when you're adult and you want to play in the sense of you want to take a vacation, you have to have power, you have to have money in the bank for that to happen. So play requires power. In other words, the form of God who plays the most is the most powerful at the same time. And again, that's Krishna. And Brahma is realizing all this here. So Brahma is saying that to Krishna here, no? I mean, comparing to... I'm totally attracted to this form of you as a child, as a boy, basically, no? Fitting for Sakya Rasa. And this form, as we mentioned, is no different from yours. There's no difference between Krishna and his body. He is his body. This is... basically, that's a very interesting realization that Brahma is having also. You are your body. That's interesting, because we hear so many times, we are not this body. This body. But Krishna is that body, his body. So Brahma is realizing this, no? The non-difference, the absoluteness of Krishna, his body, his qualities, nam, rupa, guna, lila, his form. And this is indicated with the expression, tano bhuta mayasya. You have a spiritual body. Your body is not made of ingredients, material ingredients, nor gross, nor psychic. So, Sanatana Goswami paraphrases Brahma again, in his pro commentary, or he's saying, I am unable to understand the glory of you who are this body, the form of Bala Gopal. I'm unable to understand that. So, how can I possibly understand, on top of that, the glory of the experience of your bliss? Again, he's connecting his form with his bliss, but the bliss is kind of not so overtly in front of Brahma's face. But he can hint there is a type of bliss that I have no idea about. Which again has to do with this Swarupa Shaktinanda. Just a brief words about Swarupa Shaktinanda. Remember, Atmananda means the ananda of the soul. Swarupananda means the bliss that Krishna feels with his own soul, if you will, in connection to his own soul. That's called Swarupananda. But with that Swarupananda or Swarup Shakti, I mean, Krishna's soul is made of Swarup Shakti, basically. If you want to put it in some, Krishna's heart is bhakti. He says that in the Bhagavatam. He says, Mad Atmaka. Bhakti is my Atma. Bhakti is my heart. Of course, we can say bhakti personified is Sri Radha, and she is Krishna's heart. So with that abstract ananda that is in his heart, again, take shape in the form of devotees, that's the same Swarupananda, but taking a form and entering into the dynamics of loving interaction. So that's more blissful. Srila Jiva Goswami gives the example of, like if you're, how do you say in English? Whistling? Yeah, exactly. So you can do that, and that creates some sound. But if you pour that same air through a bamboo stick with holes, in other words, through a flute, it's the same air, but it will pass through that particular medium and appear in a very much attractive way. You follow? So it's the same air, but appearing through the instrument of bamboo, appearing more sweet. So similarly, Krishna has his own Swarupananda, but when that expresses through the through his devotees, that appears in a way that is much more attractive. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the example is, I don't know, like a father. Father has some money, and with that money the father can buy something and enjoy that. Can buy, I don't know, some candy and eat the candy. But instead of that, he will give the money to his child and tell him, go and get some candy. And the child will go get the candy and will bring and share with the dad. And the dad will enjoy that much more. Because it is including a loving interaction. But it's the same money. No? He has his own money, but expressing itself in the context of some loving interaction that ends up being much more pleasing to the father. Again, there are analogies, examples to try to illustrate these type of things. You have some minutes? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're okay. I just wondered what the time was.
Okay.
I'm not bothered about it.
Okay. We have eternity.
Yeah.
Giving support. Srila Jiva Goswami, let's continue with this idea of the form and the bliss and the mercy, because all these words are here and they are interconnected. Krishna's form with his bliss, with the mercy Brahma is receiving. So Jiva Goswami quotes Sridhar Swami and says, Sridhar Swami explains that this verse is an answer to the objection, you offer respects to me, but actually you are simply describing my form. No? Krishna may tell that to Brahma. You are offering respect, but actually just describing my form. But actually, to say that Brahma's purpose is praising Bhagavan, describing his excellences, which are not different from here. So the word mat anugrahasya, again, refers, you have shown your mercy to me. So which is the mercy that Krishna has shown to Brahma that he is referring to here? There are different levels of explanation. Jiva Goswami will say, mat anugrahasya is Brahma saying, oh Krishna, you have shown mercy to me because you have encouraged me in the creation of the universe, in my task as the architect of the universe. You have given me support. You have shared some knowledge at the beginning of creation. You have shown some mercy to me in that connection. This is a level of understanding Madanugrahasya, but there's a deeper level which is shared by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And let's go to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. This is generally as we say in Spanish, like the strawberry on top of the cake or something. What do you say here? The icing?
The cream and the cake.
Yeah. The icing of the cake or whatever?
The cream.
Yeah, exactly. So sorry, but we are biased here to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. I mean, hopefully we are biased to all of our acharyas, but he will make very interesting contribution. And there will be lots of, again, in-between dialogues inside the same verse as usual. So I'll read it. He says, hearing Brahma's praises, Krishna may object. Listen, Brahma, you are the master of all powers in this universe, while I am but the son of a cowherd man in the forest. You are an ancient and exalted personality, and I am but a small boy. You are knowledgeable of all the Vedas and endowed with the most exemplary conduct, but I am an ignorant keeper of cows, and so unaware of proper conduct that I run around with some yogurt rice in my left hand. You are the Supreme Lord, full of bliss, Krishna is saying to Brahma, and the controller of all illusion. Oh, well, Brahma's heads are like... But I am bewildered by your illusion, and wander about the forest grieving over lost calves. Thus, I am not qualified for your praise. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, this is what Krishna is saying in between the previous verse and this one. No? So Vishwanath will say, fearing such objections from Krishna, Brahma spoke this verse, repenting for having offended Krishna due to his ignorance. No? So again, not necessarily Krishna said that. Sometimes Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes as if that actually happened, or sometimes that just Brahma is in his mind anticipating Krishna may present these arguments. So this is what I say in reply, before even he presents them. And in replying to this, Brahma expressed different levels of ignorance. Remember, in this verse we saw how Brahma is saying, I cannot understand, I cannot understand, I cannot understand. So let's share four levels of ignorance. One, we could say one, each of them, each one corresponding with each head. No? four Vimohans. So it says like this. Number one, which actually is the content of the verse. What the verse is saying is actually showing four levels or types of Vimoha, four head spinnings of Brahma. I cannot estimate the greatness of your transcendental body engaging in childish play. What to speak of your pastimes of youth? No, like Krishna's not yet a kishore. He's not entering teenagehood. But that will happen. So somehow Vishwanath Chakravarti presents this in Brahma. I cannot understand what's going on now. What to speak when you start to dance Rasa Lila with the gopis, and that will be even more bewildering. So first head spinning for a new reason. Second type of Vimohan. If I cannot understand the potency of your transcendental body, then how could I possibly understand the happiness you experience within yourself by herding the calves? Second one. Brahma cannot fathom. What must you be experiencing with those calves in the forest? Again, he wants that, remember. He wants to be a gopa. And a way to enter that is to appreciate what Krishna is experiencing in that particular situation. Yeah. Three, third head, spinning. I cannot comprehend the happiness your cowherd friends feel. What to speak of the happiness you experience by directly playing with them? So I cannot... Before was you with the cops. Now you with your friends and your friends with you. What must be the ananda you may be experiencing? Oh my God. I mean, I want that, but at the present moment, just I can put my head to spin, basically. Which Brahma needs to go through that filter before he enters, eventually, as we will see, the Braja Lila. First, he needs to have his four heads, boom, in the ground, spinning, basically. And the fourth head spinning, four Vimohan, is if a person with a controlled mind, like me, cannot understand that happiness, what can be said of those... if a person without a controlled mind cannot understand that happiness, what can be said of those with controlled minds, like me? Because we hear, okay, you without controlled mind, you cannot understand. But Brahma said, I have controlled mind, and I cannot understand. So what's going on here? No? So his foreheads are spinning like Vishwanath Chakravarti said. Four new types, upgraded Vimohan. So he continues saying a few more words by Vishwanath Chakravarti. Brahma described Krishna's body in this way to prove that the Supreme Lord cannot be understood by yoga, austerity, or Shastric study. Krishna is understood only by the sidelong glance of mercy. That's the means of knowing.
The sidelong glance of mercy.
Like a way of saying, even a sidelong glance of his mercy is powerful enough for us to have access to understand him. Real understanding comes through kripa, not through grace, not by any ascending method, personal effort. Of course, we have to make effort, but as our Guru Maharaj will say, our effort is to get grace. Not effort just to obtain everything by our own, but make my best effort to be in the best possible situation to be a recipient for grace. So nor Sankhya Yoga na Udar, he's saying this in Bhagavatam so many times to Uddhava and to many others, I cannot be known, I cannot be approached by these all other methods, I cannot be known by that. Jato Bhaktir Mamorjita, only by Bhakti I can be approached. By my grace comes specially through Bhakti. So that's a means of knowing. Brahma is realizing this. Remember, Brahma is a person with great knowing capacity. I mean, we see sometimes the scientists in this world who have a great capacity and they will feel, okay, we can know everything by rational method. And they are not Brahma. Brahma is minimum four of those scientists and plus more. And he's realizing this is not the method. The methodology for this is transrational. It's not irrational, but it's not rational either. It's transrational methodology. So let's see the conclusion of Brahma according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. My Lord, although I've offended you, due to your magnanimity, you have shown such mercy to me. There is here another level of what means Krishna showed mercy to Brahma. That mercy consisted of revealing your sweet human form after showing your awesome Vishnu Murtis, all these forms of Vishnu, but then your human form. What is the cause of your mercy? And now we enter the, how do you say here, the real deal. What's the cause of your mercy? He said, your body is sa icha maya. This is arguably the most important term in the whole verse. Sa icha maya, which has different meanings. Maya in this case means of the nature of. Sa means own, and icha means desire. So sa icha maya can mean your body comes out of your own desire. You are independent, but also it's connected to, it appears, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, in response to the desire of your pure devotees who want to see and serve you. You show mercy out of affection for your devotees. Though I am an offender, because I have a semblance of devotion, I have become qualified to receive a drop of your mercy. So Brahma is experiencing at this moment, I am receiving mercy. When you are receiving mercy, and you really are receiving mercy, and you cannot deny that. That will be so overwhelmingly clear. So Brahma has, again, the object of the affection in front of his eyes and feeling this such a degree of mercy. And Brahma is a devotee, as we know. He's not yet a Vrajavasi, but he is a devotee. So he's very humbled by feeling, you are giving me this mercy, which is allowing me to appreciate how your form is in correspondence to the love of your devotees. How the main quality of yours is to be affectionate to your devotees. That's said in Shastra. Krishna's favorite quality in himself, no? Like if you were doing an interview with Krishna and asking him, what's the favorite quality in yourself? And Krishna will say, Bhakta Vatsalya. That I am affectionate to my devotees. That's the thing I like the most in me. Which of course is not something in him, it's in connection to them. So that's perfectly humble. It's not like a proud answer. Oh, this is my... He can say so many things that he has in himself that are like nobody else has. But his favorite aspect in him is totally dependent on his devotees. That's my favorite me, Krishna says. When I'm controlled by the affection of them. Interestingly, in the Bhagavatam, there's one part with a very nice definition of Bhagavan is there. It says, Bhagavan Bhakta Bhakti Mam. Bhagavan means, Bhagavan is the Bhakta of his Bhaktas. That's the definition of Bhagavan according to the Bhagavatam.
Bhakta of his Bhaktas.
He's the devotee of his devotees. That's how Krishna feels. I am a devotee of my devotees. I live to serve them. I mean, in the higher realm, the devotee thinking, I am a devotee of Krishna, and Krishna thinking, I am a devotee of my devotee. Everyone thinking I am a devotee. Nobody thinking I am God, I am the master. Everyone thinking I am a devotee. I am to serve. Krishna himself thinking that. I am to serve Yashoda, Nanda. I am to love them. No. So that's the reality, the ultimate reality. Everyone thinking devotee. And devotee of the devotee. Dasa no dasa. Let's go to some other, before finishing, some in this connection, some nuanced meanings of Swaichamaya, this idea of Krishna's identity coming out of the desire of the devotees, or also Srinivas Suri, which is another commentator of the Bhagavatam, he says, Krishna's body is Swaichamaya, which means that in which the main thing is his desire. That's an interesting, more literal definition of the term. Krishna's body is that in which the main thing about his body is his desire. And again, Krishna has transcendental desires, not mundane desires. And all of them are in reciprocation to the desires of his devotees. No? Like for example, Yashoda has a very strong desire of loving Krishna as a mother. So immediately, that creates a desire in Krishna in connection to Yashoda's desire. Yashoda desires so badly, you say in English, right? Wants so badly to serve him as a child that immediately Krishna reciprocates to that. How does Krishna reciprocate? Krishna is filled with the desire to serve Yashoda as a mother. I mean, whatever Krishna desires in relation to his devotees is in connection to what the devotees are desiring in connection to Krishna. Mm-hmm. You follow how this works. Now, the devotee feels, I want so badly to love Krishna this way. So Krishna immediately will manifest, I want so badly to love you in this way, in perfect reciprocation to your desire. So in that sense, the main thing in Krishna's body is his desire. In other words, his body is a result of the desire of his devotees to love him in a certain way, and he adopts a particular shape to reciprocate with that desire. So his form has to do with the desire that he has to love his devotees, to reciprocate. Or, Srinivas Suri says, like to share further picture, Swechamaya means the main thing about his body is his devotees' desire. Which is again another way of the same thing. The main thing about his body is his desire or is his devotees' desire. I mean, one is inseparable from other because Krishna's desire is in connection to the devotees' desires and the devotees' desires are in connection to Krishna's desire. So that's why I like this point of Krishna's body or Krishna's form is a byproduct, if you want to put it, not beginning in time at any point, but it's a byproduct of the love of his devotees. The devotees have a certain love, Krishna manifests accordingly. You put Hanuman, Ram Bhakti, Ramachandra will appear, not Braja Krishna. Because there is a certain love in Hanuman which corresponds with a very unique object of love, which is not Braja Krishna, it's Ramachandra. So the absolute will be transformed accordingly. Like we know when we are in our own limited experience, we may be with our, as we spoke the other day, if I am with my grandmother, I will adopt a particular identity. If I am with my mother, another identity. If I am with my son, another identity. I mean, still I'm the same person, but there are so many faces to myself. So if that happens to us, what to speak of the absolute? So according to the type of love, that's the meaning of I reciprocate accordingly. So in this particular point in which Brahma is praying, of course, the form that Brahma is seeing is the perfect reciprocation of Krishna with the love of the gopas. Because that's the environment Krishna is seeing now here. And that's the longing of Brahma. Again, that's the desire of Brahma as a devotee, Krishna in Sakya. And that's of course, the desire of Krishna in reciprocation. The Bhagavatam is saying, Tvam bhakti yoga paribhavita hrit saroja se sritekshita patena nunata pumsham tattat vaputa urugaya vibhavayanti tattat dieta urugaya vibhavayanti tattat vapu pranaya se sadanugrahaya. Brahma is saying that, interestingly, in the third canto. Basically, he's saying, oh, my Lord, you actually appear in the heart of the devotees in the corresponding form in which they think of you, in which they meditate on you, in which they worship you, they project that form of you, and you appear eventually in the hearts of those devotees in that specific form which is perfectly fitting, reciprocating with how they are approaching you in love. So Vishwanath Chakravartarku concludes, and with this we are almost finishing. In conclusion, Brahma implies in this verse, I cannot estimate the potency of your spiritual body, even though I have revealed the Vedas and studied the fruit of the Vedas, Srimad Bhagavatam. I cannot even understand the greatness of your Vasudeva forms. What to speak of the greatness of the original source of those transcendental forms, the two-armed form of Govinda, with all that it implies, as we see, the love of the devotees and so on. So again, the idea of unable to understand is like inside all this verse, it's all pervading in this verse, appears many times in this verse, many levels of the mohan. And somehow we are seeing here the bewilderment, if you want to put it like that, once my Guru said that. Here we are seeing the bewilderment, it may sound a little bit paradoxical, but he jokingly say, this section is about the bewilderment of the founder Acharya of our Sampradaya. Brahma Vimohan Lila. We are at the Brahma Sampradaya. We are here witnessing the bewilderment of the founder Acharya of our Sampradaya, interestingly. So, again, this unable to understand that Brahma is experiencing will take us to the next verse, which will be one of the most well-known verses of the whole Brahma Stutyan of the Bhagavatam. We will see it tomorrow. And in that verse, Brahma will establish, if you will, the foundation to access to the mystery of Krishna's form and Krishna's pastime. At this point, he's bewildered and realizing, I cannot understand, I cannot understand, I cannot understand. So how to understand, that will be shown in the next verse when Brahma will speak about Jnana Sunya Bhakti. But tomorrow we will be speaking about that. For today, we'll close our session here. We'll put our Bhagavad Katha to rest. And tomorrow morning also we have Q&A at 10 a.m. So I will say, since we extended today considerably, if there are any questions, we can address them. But if there's some brief question, we can.
Can I ask one question?
Yes, yes, for sure.
Okay, you seem to be stressing a lot that Krishna is the original form, the two-arm form. And then the Vishnu forms, the four-arm form, are his expansion of the original Krishna form. Mm-hmm. Well, why is it that many types of Hindus and other types of people that worship Krishna believe that the four-arm Vishnu form is the original and Krishna is the expansion?
Hmm. Well, because interestingly, and this is a very interesting point and question, there's place for that also. For example, there are other Vaishnava Sampradayas who will think, what do you say? No, will think Vishnu is the original God, Krishna is an avatar of Vishnu, like so many other avatars. We hear sometimes about the Das avatar. Now you have Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, Nishrimhadev, and so on, Krishna, and so on. But the conception is, but all of them come from Narayan, Vishnu, who is God. The Sri Sampradaya, the followers of Ramanujacharya, they will think like this. They will think, we will go to Vaikuntha, we will serve Narayan, and sometimes Narayan will show, even in Vaikuntha, some of these different faces of his avatars as Vishnu, and as Krishna or others. No, it is described a little bit in Brihad Bhagavatamrita of Sanatan Goswami, to say that when Gopa Kumar was traveling in his ontological journey, if you will, trying to find eventually Krishna, he goes to Vaikuntha at one point. And in Vaikuntha, of course, he wants to love Krishna as a friend, but he's in Vaikuntha with everyone is relating to Narayan in Aishwarya and Bhav. There's love there. It's not, when we see awe and reverence, do not think everyone is like afraid of Narayan. No? There is a type of love, but different from the one of Raj. It's a love when you are aware he's God. No? He's to be loved because he's God. But Gopa Kumar reaches Vaikuntha, he sees Narayan, but interestingly, he doesn't see Narayan. He sees Krishna. He says, Gopal. And he shouts, Gopal, and runs to embrace Narayan. So, and at that moment, there is like alert, no? In Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha means without anxiety. For the first moment, Vaikuntha was with anxiety. Everyone will say, what's going on with this newcomer? And all these gatekeepers, stop, you cannot do that. How you will embrace God? And Gopa Kumar was like, why not? No? I mean, he was not thinking he's God. Because his subjective feeling was for like expanding to the point of not seeing Narayan as everyone sees him in Vaikuntha. And they say that after that, Narayan himself... But Gopa Kumar stayed some time in Vaikuntha. So Narayan made the whole arrangement. There was one section in Vaikuntha which was like Vrindavan. So he made some like gardens and villages. And Narayan himself will appear like Krishna to Gopa Kumar in Vaikuntha. But still Gopa Kumar was like, thank you for that. But I cannot stay here. Sorry, I have to continue my journey. Now, so I'm mentioning this to give further nuance to what's going on in these places. But actually, if someone belongs to the Sri Sampradaya, they will think Vishnu is the original source and Krishna is in his avatar. And there's a way of proving that according to Shastra also, if you take that particular subjective view. Now, it's not that it's not possible. I mean, we are Gaudiyas, we will understand Shastra from a certain way, which makes sense and it's okay, and that's why we are bona fide Sampradaya. But the point is, the other Sampradayas are also bona fide. So it means whatever they are concluding, it cannot be wrong. There is place for that. There is place for them to stay eternal in Vaikuntha and feel and think Narayan is God and Krishna is And try to understand this. Many of them are already in Vaikuntha, liberated forever. So, I mean, they cannot be wrong. You cannot reach eternity with the wrong idea. No? But that's not our particular like approach to the Absolute. So the Absolute lends itself to those types of possibilities. No? Like someone who is worshipping Ramachandra also will think, wow, this is the best. And for them it's the best. And Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, like we said the other day, he said, every devotee will think, oh, this form of the Absolute is the best. No? Whether it may be Vishnu, Ram, and he says, and everyone is correct. No? Each one in their own bhava, emotion, oh, Ramachandra is the best. Hanuman will think like that. No, he, don't take Ramachandra from Hanuman. I mean, he won't accept any replacement. This is it. Or this is it, Narayan, Vishnu, this is my deal, some will think. And there's place for that in eternity. So that's a very interesting idea, no? For us to also be open-minded here and not just think Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God and everyone has to accept that and everyone else is in Maya if you do not accept. No, Sri Vaishnav will think differently for eternity. And there's place for that and they are not wrong. But it's a subjective view. Now, of course, we have our way to proving all the things through Shastra. But again, that's our own subjective view, which is there's place for that. But other sampradayas will understand the same verses in a different way. All these verses that we quote to prove Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you go to a Sri Sampradaya and they will have a different view on that. And a correct view as well. Correct. I mean, legal. It's not just like they are fantasizing. So that's an interesting thought, no? Like, okay, it's not that only we are right. I mean, we have our arguments to show how we make our case. Krishna is too Bhagavan, so yeah, and it's sound arguments, and there's so much elaboration on that in the books of our tradition. But one goes to their own respective tradition, and they also have their own points, and it makes sense for them, according to some association they receive, it predisposes them to think in that particular way. And for them, it makes sense to think Narayan is God, not Krishna. And as I like to say, in one level, it's also that's true also for us. Because when we will reach Golok Vrindavan, we won't think Krishna is God. We will think Narayan is God, not Krishna. So we will see, oh, the three Vaishnavas were right. So there is place. No? So that's an interesting idea, how this subjectivity plays out in transcendence, in eternity, and each one has their own view and conviction, and there's no need for clashing or conflict. As we spoke today, that's why Brihad Bhagavatamrita is such a nice book, and that's the first book of our Sampradaya, written by Sanatana Goswami, and that's showing this Gopakumar, this Krishna Bhakta, but visiting all these different devotees of Narayan, of Ramachandra, of these forms. And there's never like conflict, like surrender to Krishna, surrender to my, no, but appreciation of each one's faith and inspiration and giving this, there's place for this, this place for this. And even I'm inspired by seeing that. No? I remember last year we went to a temple, Venkateshwar temple in North Carolina. There's a Sri Vaishnav temple, in the Hindu temple, very beautiful. And the devotees invited me, Maharaj, we can go today, they do a special like Abhishek to the deity. I say, yes, let's go to Vaikuntha. No? Because it's like traveling to Vaikuntha, basically. And we were there and they made like, they were very kind. They allow us to enter to a very like intimate section of the altar where they were doing all this, and there was like hours and hours bathing and reciting mantras. And of course it was a different mood. It was Vaikuntha, literally. But it was beautiful. I mean, it's not that I want to go to Vaikuntha, but I can appreciate the beauty of that and the depth of that. And they were worshipping Narayan, his God, he's the source of her. And there's place to appreciate that and even to be nourishing in my own faith, and well, seeing others' faith, you know, that's the, I would say, the one of the great challenges for all of us to reach that point where not only we allow other faiths to exist, but we have the capacity of interacted with them in a way that they are nourished. Their faith nourishes our faith. It's not that we end up questioning our own faith by seeing the faith of others, but they had the capacity of nourishing, and we can nourish their faith through our faith. That's a very refined level of interreligious, if you will, dialogue. As Thomas Merton once said, he said, if you want to have interreligious dialogue, first you have to have intra-religious dialogue. Like in play, you have to dialogue with yourself internally, and understand your own tradition to the point that you can speak with others and be nourished by what others think and so on. So first, you have to dialogue with yourself and see how much you understand your own tradition. Because that will show up when you share with someone from other tradition. Actually, you will be put to test how much you understand your own tradition. Go to speak with someone from other tradition and see how you feel, how you react, how much you can appreciate, or you may feel attacked, and so many things can happen that actually will reflect back where we are in our own journey. You know? So, anyhow, some thoughts. I hope that helps. Yeah. And thank you for your question. And if there are more questions, I think the rest of you may be able to come tomorrow morning so we can continue. Thank you so much for your time and presence. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Sri Sri Gornityananda ki jai, Sri Sri Brajanan Haladarju ki jai, Sri Sri Mahavagavan ki jai, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Brahma Stuti ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanand ki jai.